Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
You're a wizard, Jimmy.
Hey, you're a wizard, Inara. What's up, everybody? You're watching and listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And it's time for Commander Christmas. It is time to talk about some decks.
Yep, we're going to be beginning our pre-con review season here. We're going to review each and every one of the pre-cons. Starting,
and there are a lot.
Yeah. We're going to start with the Inala or the Wizards deck. Yeah. Is there a name to it?
Arcane Wizardry, I believe.
Arcane Wizardry.
Very arcane indeed. Wizards, of course, one of Magic's most well-known tribes. I don't know if many people predicted Wizards would be one of the tribes in Commander 2017, but I'm pretty excited that
I think it was the last one revealed, and I think some people were surprised. Originally, the art got let out, and a lot of people thought it was Clerics.
Clerics? Whoa.
Yeah, just because Inala kind of looks like.
True. She's doing a clerical thing.
Ritual.
Yeah,
well, she's
a ritual of sorts.
Archmage ritualist. So,
yeah.
So we're going to do a review of this deck basically like we always do. So it's going to be as if you bought the pre-con and you want to do some maybe quick tweaks and upgrades. It's not going to be about, you know, rebuilding the deck from scratch or anything. And just sort of a look at the deck, who you might want to run as a commander, what it wants to do, just so you know maybe how you're going to play it. Because we're big advocates of taking these decks and playing them straight out of the box first. Especially if you can in this environment with the other three, just because they're designed that way, and it tends to be really fun.
And one way that you can play this deck straight out of the box is thanks to our sponsor, CardKingdom.com/C17. That's where you're going to want to go and get your sealed product, such as these pre-constructed decks. It's a great place to get it, especially if you want fast shipping, if you're not close to a store around you and you just want to get it to your doorstep. Go to CardKingdom.com/C17, and you can order your commander product there.
Yeah, you'll get it super fast, and you want this stuff as soon as it comes out. So pre-order it now using the affiliate link. The other sponsor for the show is Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro has a ton of the stuff that kind of goes along with the product. So, like we've been talking about in the last few episodes, the deck boxes, which are themed to match all the Eminence commanders. They have a playmat that also has the same art. They have sleeves, each one of these. Here, we'll show the sleeves.
Oh, yes.
Like, these ones have Inala on them.
Yeah, you have Inala in hand every time you play this deck.
It's pretty good. Although, if she's your commander, you technically sort of have that anyway.
True.
The sleeves are, actually, we've been talking about how they have done the sleeves in what we're calling the Eclipse technology, so you can see how they're sort of different colors on the inside, which
it's another layer of printing between the sleeve and the actual back of it. It makes it sturdier, makes it hold up a little better, and the shuffle feel is nice as well, even with these full art sleeves.
Yep. All right, and
Final way.
Yeah, sorry, I almost forgot.
One of the most important ways to support the show is through Patreon. You can support us directly there for as little as $1 an episode, and we do one thing where we call out a patron per episode, and this week we are thanking
Justin Joseph.
Another first name, first name.
Two superheroes in a row. Justin.
Pretty cool.
You rock.
Thanks, buddy. All right, let's move right into it. The Commander 2017 Wizard Precon deck review. Wizards of the Coast made the Wizard deck. Who would have thunk it? One of the things that we want to do with this is to essentially help highlight what you can take out of the deck to make it better, but we're not talking about stripping it all the way down and building a deck from scratch. There's a lot of good pieces in here, and also we're aiming this towards people that may not have infinite budgets, and this is just a really quick and easy way to upgrade the deck without making the complete overhaul.
Yeah, so maybe like 10 to 12 cards that we think could easily go in and what you might take out. And also just a good general look at the deck to see, you know, maybe what you might think about while you're playing it, just knowing what's in it and where the deck's leaning. So
totally.
Well, let's start with the new legendary creatures. There are four. Now, one of them you can't actually run as the commander because it's two color. So I'm going to read that one first. That's Taigam, Sadisi's Hand. It's three, a blue and a black for a 3/4 legendary creature, human wizard. Taigam says, skip your draw step. That seems bad. At the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top three cards of your library. Put one of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. So you still get to draw the normal amount of cards, but you sort of filter, you get selection, and you're filling your graveyard. So that seems good. And then Taigam also has an activated ability. You can play a black and tap him to exile X cards from your graveyard. Target creature gets -X/-X until end of turn.
Yeah, there's actually a very similar Delve card, I think, in Concept Arc here that did something to that effect. It seems cool. I like, you know, I think having that on a stick is always good, being able to just kill a creature for as little as one mana.
Although you have to have cards in your graveyard. You're going to be able to do it often, and I'm assuming a Tygam deck would have a lot of self-mill.
The whole skip your draw step thing is a little troublesome. Even though you do get card selection and you're drawing a card, I'd rather draw two cards instead of one.
Especially if you're, depends on the playgroup, but if people are playing Howling Mines and things like that, all of a sudden you're skipping more than one card, it can be bad. It can bite you. This is an interesting card. It's not going to be the lead singer for this deck because it only has two colors, so it's not even in contention. I don't think you'd want to anyway. You need a very specific deck built around Tygam.
Totally.
Do you want to read the next one?
Yes, the next one is going to be Kess, Dissident Mage, and we're going to have a full episode about this, by the way. Because
with Alex Kessler.
Yeah, who's got to preview this card online because it shares a name with him. One blue, black, and red. So that is Grixis, full Grixis. You can play this as a commander in this deck, and it's also the same casting custom Archis of the black Rose, the greatest card of all time. It's a 3/4 legendary human wizard with flying. During each of your turns, you may cast an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard. If a card cast this way will be put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead. So we talk about this a lot, but pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's kind of the Caridor of instants and sorceries, right? It exiles it, whereas Caridor doesn't. But it has a very similar effect. I think that card's very strong. That would be in contention, I would say, as a possible sort of choice that you could use as your commander when you're running this deck. We'll talk about that in a minute. The next one's my favorite potential commander from the entire C17 set. It's Marisil the Pretender. One in Grixis, so one blue, black, and red for a 4/4 legendary creature, human wizard. When Marisil enters the battlefield, you may exile an artifact or creature card from your hand or graveyard and put a cage counter on it, and then Marisil has all activated abilities of all cards you own in exile with cage counters on them. You may activate each of those abilities only once each turn. We've compared Marisil to Sylar from Heroes, where kind of stealing the abilities from other things, and so eventually Marisil has like a ton of abilities.
Yeah.
You know, a bunch of utility.
When she lasers the brain out of their skulls, they go into exile.
Yeah.
Including artifacts. So Marisil can become a Gilded Lotus.
That's
can also become a Mana Vault without having the untap clause. It's just the activated ability part, which is really cool.
So, yeah, that's interesting, something to think about. And then, of course,
and the leader, the lead singer of the deck is Anala, Archmage Ritualist, who is 2 in Grixis, 5 total CMC, for a 4/5 legendary creature human wizard with Eminence. And we talked about Eminence a bit. Eminence is an ability that triggers and works whenever your commander, all 4 of these commanders, have it when they're in the battlefield or in the command zone. Eminence. Whenever another non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, if Anala is in the command zone or on the battlefield, you may pay 1 mana. If you do, create a token that's a copy of that wizard. This token gains haste. Exile at the beginning of the next end step. And then she has this interesting, tap 5 untapped wizards you control. Target player loses 7 life.
5 wizards is a lot.
It's a lot. Unless you're making a lot of tokens.
Yeah, true. And if you have 5 wizards, they're probably going to want to do something better than that.
Yeah.
But the token thing is interesting. She kind of like temporarily Riku's something, but only for 1 mana, right? It has to be a wizard, but that's a very powerful ability. So before we choose who we're going to sort of suggest to you to run as the, and it's not going to be a big surprise, spoiler alert. before we choose, we want to do our famous segment, which is
stats.
Oh, we got an echo machine too. We've upgraded.
It costs a lot.
Let's go through the stats. Card draw, there's about 11 card draw cards, about what you'd expect from Wizards. They're very good at drawing cards, so that's great. You know, obviously we usually like to have 10. Ramp is 6, so a little bit low. There's about 10 targeted removal spells or effects. That's a lot. 10. Usually we want around 5 or so.
5, yeah.
And there's about 4 board wipes.
Yeah.
So interestingly, you know, on our pillars of the format statistics, the Wizards deck is pretty close. The ramp's a
pretty
little
close,
low. The
yeah.
removal's a little high. How many Wizards total in the deck? 30. It's a lot.
That's a third of the deck, and that's about as many lands as you put in these kinds of decks, too.
So, and from the deck-building template, we know that if a deck cares about a certain thing, whether that's instants and sorceries or creatures or specifically a tribe, you usually want somewhere around the realm of 30 to 35 of that thing. So we're right there, which is good. And then so we know Kess cares about instants and sorceries, so I looked at how many instants and sorceries are in the deck. There's about 18, which is a decent amount, but I don't think it's enough to really warrant it being a Kess deck. 18 is like not like none. You're going to draw a couple per game.
I feel like that's about normal for a deck anyway. So
might be, And then so then I was like, well, what kind of activated abilities are there, tap abilities for Marisil? And there's about 10. Now, I didn't count necessarily all the mana rocks, so maybe there's closer to 15 mm-hmm. of those. But again, if you got 18 cards for one commander, that's Kess. You got about 15 activated tap abilities for Marisil. But you have 30 wizards in the deck, which is what Enola wants. It feels like you really want Enola.
Yeah,
as
I think
the commander.
I think it actually goes the same for all the decks. You kind of want the main.
They usually
commander.
Build it that way, but every once in a while, we've seen somewhere yes. I'm like, you know what? I would run this commander instead because they didn't actually build the deck to take advantage of this sort of quote unquote main commander.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to check, and it also sort of tells you what your strategy wants to be. There's also a category that I called recast or reclaim stuff from your graveyard. So there's some stuff that like reanimates your own creature or gets an instant or sorcery back from the graveyard. And for that one, there's about 6 to 7 cards. Tygam is one of those.
Or Kaomancer.
Yeah, so there is some sort of general recursion. So what does this tell us? I think it tells us that the overall strategy seems to be like Value Town,
mm-hmm.
you know, with reusable activated abilities, enter the battlefield effects, especially because Enola can sort of give haste to a creature in a weird way, right? So if you cast a wizard, you pay one mana, you make a copy of it, but that copy has haste. And you only get it until the end step when it gets yeah. when it goes away. That's almost like creating the same creature with haste, right?
Yes. It's good. There is, you know, if the creature has a tap ability on it, then it's even
you
better.
You can use it right away.
However, yeah. not so good with legendary creatures, as something we learned on game nights, yes. actually. It's just, you obviously, if you make a copy of it, you have to choose which one stays around. So
it just turns off our ability, basically, unless yeah. you want to use it right away for some reason, which maybe you do. And then... You know, the value thing also is because of the recursive abilities on some of this stuff tells you that, you know, the deck is kind of value-oriented, right?
Grixis is definitely a value color base.
Yeah. Rampant card draw, I think the draw looks really good. 11 card draw spells, that's great. It's going to make the deck more consistent. You're going to hit your land drops more.
Yeah.
But your ramp is a little low with 6 cards.
You need a lot of ramp in the deck like this. You're
especially since copies. Enola actually needs extra mana to yeah. activate. So you already know it's going to be a little mana hungry.
And there are cards in here like Nivix Guildmage and stuff that want you to use mana. So the more mana you have access to, I think the better. I think this deck needs to ramp.
Yeah. So you doing. Probably that's one of the things going to be on our list that we need to add is ramp. Board wipes and targeted removal. We talked about this a little bit. You know, you kind of expect the Wizards deck to have a lot of tricks, a lot of instant speed stuff.
A lot of spells.
As a result, we got a ton of targeted removal. In fact, I think it's almost too much targeted removal. I think I'd rather have some more proactive cards
yeah.
and lose a little bit of the targeted removal.
Especially if Kess isn't going to be your commander and it's supposed
right.
to be Enola. Maybe they put in more for, you know, the times you do get Kess out and you get single targeted removal. But otherwise, I think Enola does not want that much.
Yeah.
Board wipes are good, though.
Yeah, 4 board wipes is a good amount. I think that's right in the wheelhouse of what we would want to see. So that feels good. So let's go to the best cards in the deck. So this is where we talk about some of the cards that I think really can make the deck go, or you're really looking to leverage in a good way. That's a good one.
Yeah, Azami, Lady of Scrolls. I mean, this may be the single best wizard you could put in a deck like this to pair with Enola.
I mean, statistically on EDH Rec, I know that Azami is always the wizard tribal commander with the most popularity. So
oh, really?
That's sort of the go-to wizard commander. Because
yeah.
Think of with the tokens, she works really good, right? You make Enola token with, you know, so let's say you play another wizard.
Yeah, what Azami does is you can tap an untapped wizard you control to draw a card. I use this in Game Night's episode 8. But yeah, with Enola, you're making a token with haste, and sometimes your wizards, Azami's a 0/2, for example.
You don't actually need the haste for Azami's ability either. It's like
yeah.
the downside. So you just need wizards.
You just need wizards.
So you play a wizard, make a token, tap them both right away to draw 2 cards.
Pretty good.
Azami can tap herself.
Yep. Can also tap Enola.
Yeah.
Not inside the command zone. But yeah, I think it's interesting because you're not going to really want to attack. The haste on Enola is not for combat. It's for activated abilities and stuff. So if you're not attacking with them and they don't have an activated ability, then why not tap them for a card? Seems pretty good.
Pretty good. The next one is a really innocuous card, but I think it gives us a good roadmap of sort of where we'd like to push this deck
yeah.
with, you know, with sort of small changes
this card
when we first
there.
Get it. Yeah, and this card was really impressive. It was played in Game Nights, it's Seagate Oracle, it's 2 and a blue for a 1/3 human wizard, but when Seagate Oracle enters the battlefield, you look at the top 2 cards of your library, you put one of them into your hand and the other onto the bottom of your library. So you get to look at 2 cards, pick one, but with Enola, you pay
4
a blue
total.
And 3 colorless,
yeah.
make a copy of Seagate Oracle when it comes in, and you do that twice. I mean, it's now better than Moldrifter, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, you're looking at four cards and picking two, kind of, yeah.
You don't get a 2-2 flyer, but it's Commander. I don't think that's going to be your top priority here.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's a 1-3 doesn't really matter. So that card is the perfect kind of card in Anala, and actually, as we move forward, we're going to talk about it, but you want more of that of cards like that.
As many as you can get, yeah.
And this next one's really interesting, and it sort of led us to think about an interesting path that for the types of effects you might go for. So
yeah, Silumgar's Command, 3, a blue and a black for an instant, and you get to choose 2. It's a modular spell. You can choose either counter a target non-creature spell, or return target permanent to its owner's hand, or target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn, or destroy a target planeswalker. If you're in blue-black, you almost play this in every blue-black EDH deck as far as I'm concerned, because you never want to waste a slot on just destroy target planeswalker. But now
it's
that
great
you have,
to have it.
Yeah, this is an instant speed spell that can do two things. You can counter a non-creature spell like a planeswalker. You can return. You can bounce a permanent. So you can bounce a land to someone's hand if you wanted to. So it's a very powerful card.
Also, considering that Enola wants you to cast wizards, it's very possible for you to like counter their spell, bounce your Seagate Oracle back to your hand, play it the next turn to draw the best two cards out of the top four again. So the fact that Silumgar's Command is sort of reusable that way, also think of like Archaeomancer. You can get in this infinite loop where you counter non-creature spell,
right,
bounce your Archaeomancer back to your hand. Now Silumgar's Command is in the graveyard. You replay Archaeomancer, copy it, get the Silumgar's Command back and something else, and now you have Silumgar's Command again to rebounce the Archaeomancer and start getting in that kind of loop. And there's multiple ways in the deck where it's possible to build multiple ways to have that kind of chain.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're sort of locking things down with supreme amounts of value, I think.
Yeah, that's really effective. Just any modular spell, I'm always a big fan of.
Yeah, especially when you can choose two. Now all of a sudden you're getting to bounce a guy, you know, one of your wizards, and do something else. So good.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some cool new cards in the deck. So some of the cards that are new to Commander 2017. This one is called Bloodline Necromancer. This is also in the Vampire deck, but it's a Vampire Wizard. It's 4 and a black for a Vampire Wizard. A 3-2 with lifelink. It says when Bloodline Necromancer enters the battlefield, you may return target Vampire or Wizard creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Hey. To the battlefield.
Yeah.
So that's going to trigger Anala's ability. For 5 mana, you are getting something just straight back out there.
And you pay another mana, get another thing, because you create a token that's a copy of it, which would get something else out of your graveyard. And then when those things come out of your graveyard, it's possible to make copies of the things you bring back in.
It's possible to almost make tap 5 untapped wizards you control to make a target player lose 7 life.
Might be, yeah, it might be possible at that point, because Bloodline Necromancer basically represents up to, 6 wizards.
Yeah.
You have to have a lot of mana, which is another reason we want ramp. But that card seems pretty amazing. This one is really interesting.
Portal Mage, 2 and a blue for a flash 2/2 human wizard. When Portal Mage enters the battlefield during the declare attacker step, you may reselect which player or planeswalker target attacking creature is attacking. Whoa. So
think about that.
During the declare attacker step. It's a very interesting step, because this step usually just involves you turning your card sideways. It needs to be attacking already.
Right. So they have to declare their attacks. And then once attacks are declared,
you can flash
before you move
in
to blockers, you have a chance to respond, and you flash in Portal Mage. And you get to make a copy of it.
Right. So
remember,
you get two creatures. Huh?
Yeah. And you can say, oh, that thing that's coming at me, it's actually coming at Jimmy.
Yeah.
You know, or it's actually going at Gideon.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you can redirect to a planeswalker. Really interesting. You can also just make people sacrifice a creature. Let's say someone swings at someone with a Consecrated Sphinx. Be like, we're going to redirect it to the guy with the Udvara Hellkite.
That's a really good point, because a lot of people will be like, oh, I got the Sphinx, I'll swing at you because, you know, you don't have any blockers.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't
this thing
put
might
it in
die
danger
anyway.
Otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. What's interesting about this card is that Annihilator triggers will happen before you're able to redirect the creature. So you can't, like, grab a causal like and throw it at someone else and have them be annihilated.
Right, because that trigger's already on the stack.
Yeah, they attacked you, so you're just redirecting the attack itself. Anything that happens on attack will not get changed.
Still works pretty good against like Blightsteel Colossus or something.
Oh my goodness. Just out of nowhere where it's like, you know what, Jimmy, I'm going to give you one more turn to live, and then whoop. Sorry,
no,
buddy.
I'm not giving you one more turn to live. So those are two of the cool new cards. We went over a bunch of the new cards just in general in the first look episode, which we did previous to this, so we're not going to talk about every single new card. There's a bunch that are sort of shared across the decks and are still decent in this deck. Let's talk about the worst cards in the deck. So these are some of the cards that we would probably take out because they're probably not good enough to put in there or to keep in there. There's First of all, there's the curse cycle.
Right.
So this deck actually has the most curses, I think, of any of the decks. It has three.
It's got all three, huh?
Yeah, it's got Verbosity, Disturbance, and Opulence, so one for each color. I don't think these cards are abysmally horrible. I just think you can do better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do stuff. I just don't think they do enough.
I would recommend not taking them out at least once just to see what happens, because maybe your playgroup is one that is affected very much in a good way by it. Maybe your playgroup just knows how to play around it, and maybe your playgroup isn't enticed by the curse, you know, and the, you know, so
it, playing in this environment, I think they're fine. All these decks want to attack except the Wizards deck, so yeah. It does sort of make sense. But in a normal playgroup, there's a bunch of decks that don't care about combat damage or attacking, so the curses just don't work. And then with good players, you're giving them a choice. And you can expect that they're going to make the correct choice, which is not act according to like a small upside, you know, when it really matters. And so I
think Verbosity would do the best.
Yeah, because
it draws cards. You're already drawing cards.
You're the Wizards deck. You're not attacking people.
True. But here's the thing is, if people are coming after you, seeing what you've done with Anala, because she's very powerful.
True. So maybe,
but who knows?
Yeah.
I was just playing with them at least once and see what happens.
Another card to... I think to take out is Vella the Nightclad. This is one of the reprints.
Card.
Yeah, and it's a cool card. It's 4BB for a legendary human wizard of 4/4. Has Intimidate, which means this creature can't be blocked except by artifact creatures and or creatures that share a color with it. It says other creatures you control have Intimidate. And then whenever Vella the Nightclad or another creature you control leaves the battlefield, each opponent loses one life. It works with the tokens, right? Because the tokens leave the battlefield, which I think makes it seem like it's a good idea. The problem is... It's expensive for a 4/4.
Yeah.
And if that's all you're getting from it, it's not that great. And it really is all you're getting from it, because you don't care about the Intimidate. You've got Wizards.
Yeah.
They're 1/3s and 2/2 power stuff. They ain't attacking.
Yeah.
That's not how you're beating people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vela is interesting. I'd much rather just have like a...
You can't copy her because she's legendary, right?
Right.
So that hurts. Wouldn't you just rather have another type, like Seagate Oracle type of effect?
Yeah, that or if you want that kind of effect, go for like a Blood Artist. Something
yeah,
that's way cheaper,
way cheaper
and will do the effect
Although,
over a long
Blood
time.
Although Blood Artist, I think they got to die. Vela says leave the battlefield.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I think the tokens are exiled. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe
but
so.
But yeah, yeah. I get what you're saying. Like there's other things that
there's other
do
things
that.
That are, if you're going for that kind of effect, that's not, you can't look at one line of text in a 10-line card like that and be like, that's the reason why I'm putting
for
this
for six
in this
mana,
deck.
It's yeah. just a lot of mana. Another card that we think is one of the worst cards in the deck is...
Nivix Guildmage.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's a blue and a red for a 2/2 creature human wizard, and this card normally is awesome, right? You do one blue and a red to draw a card, then discard a card. Cool. And then two blue and a red to copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. If you were playing the Kess deck, I could see the Nivix Guildmage maybe making it in there, but...
Yes.
This
yes.
is a really good limited card, and it's not that good as it scales up, because 4 mana, 3 mana, and 2 mana, it ends up being more expensive than I think you'd like it to be.
It's too much to loot. You want to fork a spell, right? You got to pay 4 mana. You're just not going to get to the point where you can fork it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because, what are you going to fork? Like something that costs 5 mana? You need 9 mana now to do that, really?
Blech.
Yeah. And it's not a good target to copy for tokens, because it doesn't actually do anything like Seagate Oracle when... There's no enter the battlefield effect.
Yeah, and you can't just copy any instant or sorcery. It has to be your own.
Yep.
So
so let's talk about the notable reprints, #value, for
value.
This set. So there are a number. We're going to talk about sort of four of them. Just so you know, there are some good value in the set. Haven Ghoul Lich is one. 3BB for a zombie wizard, 4/4. Has an ability. You can pay one. And it says you may cast target creature card in a graveyard this turn. So you can kind of Caridor, but from anybody's graveyard. And then when you cast that card this turn, Haven Ghoul Lich gains all activated abilities of that card until end of turn. So Haven Ghoul sort of Sylar's something.
Yeah. Not
I
good
love this obscure Sylar reference that, you know, nobody's
no
really
one's
gonna
like,
know.
Is like, who watched Sylar, Heroes anyway?
Yeah.
Doesn't work that great with Anala, I don't think.
It's okay. It's value. I don't think it's amazing.
Yeah. It's like
at least it's not legendary.
It's like a mini Maricel.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like a kind of a worse one.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's value, right? You play it, and if it lives, you can start casting stuff out of other people's graveyards if you've got the right mana colors, right? Or at least your own. Just get some value out of it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not the worst.
It's not the worst. It's not the greatest. I'd love to see a Haven Ghoul Lich Maricel deck go off, though.
Yeah. Another one is Nin, the Pain Artist. Nin is blue and red for a 1/1 Vidalkin Wizard legendary. You can pay X, a blue and a red, and tap Nin. And then Nin, the Pain Artist, deals X damage to target creature. That creature's controller draws X cards. I actually think this is quite good in the deck because you can just use Nin on your own token.
Oh, that's right.
To draw a whole bunch of
cards. Because they're
going to
die anyway.
Yeah. So, because the token goes away at the end of turn, correct. And again, you can use it as removal on somebody else's thing. You can also sort of negotiate with them. I'll let you draw a bunch of cards. Don't hurt me. That kind of stuff. I think Nin is a very good deck on her own. But in this deck, I think she warrants keeping.
That was Kessler's, I think, original blue-red deck was
Nin. Yeah, so. And it's a good deck.
Marchesa the Black Rose got a nice reprint. Hello, my beautiful. Welcome back. Obviously, a very powerful card, but just a wizard. And the legendary creature, so you can't duplicate with Anala. So it actually isn't doing that much in this deck.
Because it works for attacking, right? Mm-hmm. She gives all your creatures dethrone, but that's an attacking, that's a combat damage-based mechanic. That's not something your deck wants to do.
These colors have almost zero ways of putting plus one counters on creatures as well, so you're not going to be able to benefit from the other side of that anyway. So
so I think Marchesa is probably not good enough to keep in the deck.
Decree of Pain, however, you keep that one in the deck.
Yeah.
Six black sorcery, destroy all creatures that can't be regenerated. Draw a card for each creature destroyed this way. So 8 mana wipe that draws you potentially like 10, 12 cards. Pretty good. Especially if you're annulling something too. I mean, you need a lot of mana to do it at that point. It also has cycling for 3 black. And when you cycle it, all creatures get -2/-2 in the turn. So you get a card if you pay 5 mana and you could potentially kill a huge chunk of the board. So,
and it's way harder to counter cycling. So Decree of Pain, very good card just in general. And that one was getting spendy, so I'm glad they reprinted it. So those are sort of the notable reprints. Again, that doesn't mean we want to keep them in the deck necessarily. I think Marchesa probably comes out.
I would take her out.
But it is nice to know there's some value in there when you purchase it. So, okay, out of the box, how does this deck feel?
Bad.
It feels unfocused.
How does it win?
That's the really good question.
Casting
about
spells?
When you look at the deck, you can't really find a good win condition. It's trying to do what sort of the classic EDH strategy of like attrition you out over time by outvaluing you. But most of those decks have something big at the top that they're going to get to. Tooth and Nail, get this combo, Rise of the Dark Realms, Insurrection, Greater Hoof Behemoth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This reminds me of the very first deck I ever built, which was a blue-black, like, haha, I'm doing tricky things.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's like, are you attacking anyone? Are you doing any damage whatsoever?
Yeah, you're spinning your wheels. That looks great, but then you don't go anywhere.
Yeah, and you're just going to get iced in a single turn. So
that
needs to happen.
Yeah, I think you want to add some win conditions, a couple of big flashy things that you can do or you can build to.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go on, speaking of that, to...
Even like Sack Outlets would be good in this deck too, just because of the tokens, get a little mana back.
I think the curve is a little off too. There's not as much lower end stuff. And the fact that when you play a wizard, you need to pay one extra mana to really get full value because of Anala and make a token. You want some 2 and 3 CMC wizards. You want more of that.
Mm-hmm.
You want more Enter the Battlefield effects too, because that's really what Anala is good at. Seagate Oracle is like you play something, you make a copy, you get double the Enter the Battlefield effects. You kind of get a Panharmonicon effect when you do that, as long as you're using a wizard with an ETB effect. So I think those are ways we want to steer the deck to take advantage. And this, again, this is a small upgrade. We're not going to be talking about major overhaul. We're talking about, you know, a dozen or slightly more cards. So let's move on to the cards to add department, the part that's the most fun. What are the cool stuff you're going to put in and why? And these are things we're thinking about. You know, that we're just going to list some stuff, and you can make a choice based on what you've got or what your budget is, what you want to add. We're not going to say, I mean, now I'm going to say it, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, like, Cyclonic Rift and stuff that's just, like, obvious. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Snapcaster Mage if you have it, Kid Jace, sorry, Jace, Prodigy,
I mean, duh, put in the good stuff if you've got it, you know.
Yeah.
We're not going to say the staple goes in every, you know, Vandal Blast, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, can't put the Prophet of Kruvix in here, unfortunately.
So I think the first category is wizards with Enter the Battlefield effects. This is sort of going to be the heart and soul of your deck, the meat of it. The basic theme is I play a wizard with an Enter the Battlefield effect. I pay one mana. I get that Enter the Battlefield effect twice.
Right.
So with that in mind, this is a really good one.
Aether Adept, one blue for a creature. Human wizard, when it enters the battlefield, return target creature to its owner's hand. So it's a man of war, but it's a wizard. So you get 2 for the price of 1. So for 4 mana, bounce 2 creatures to their creatures to their owner's hands.
And one of those creatures can be the Aether Adept.
Mm-hmm.
So you bounce one of theirs, one of your own, the Aether Adept. Replay it, do it again, replay it, do it again. You can get in this capsize loops.
Yeah. It's a sorcery speed capsize.
Yeah. So
with a creature.
The fact that for 4 mana, you can basically bounce something with buyback.
Yeah, that's actually kind of absurd, especially if you pair it with some of the... we'll talk about the flash cards you can play in this deck later.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. Another really good one is Baron, Master Wizard. I'll let you read it because I can't see that angle.
One blue, legendary human wizard, 1/1. You pay 2 mana to sacrifice a permanent and return target creature to its owner's hand.
So the permanent you sacrifice can be the token.
Right.
And then you can return one of the other things with an ETB to your hand so you can replay it.
The tokens are absurd.
Yeah.
They're just like free fuel for you to use because most of the time if you're copying something, it's like, oh, great, this is a 1/1. This is a 2/2.
I got my value for when it enters the battlefield, yeah. And now I can use it to bounce the original and replay it and make another copy. Just yeah. think.
Baron yeah. is legendary, so it's a bit tougher with yeah. him. But you're going to have tokens lying around if you're casting more than one creature spell a turn.
A new card that is not expensive is Champion of Wits. So Champion of Wits is 3 mana for a 2/1. 2 and a blue, and it says when it enters the battlefield, you may draw cards equal to its power. If you do, discard 2 cards. So you loot twice.
Mm-hmm.
It also has Eternalize. So it's 5 blue to Eternalize it, which means it comes in as a 4/4. Yeah. And in that case, you look at the top 4 cards, keep 2 of them, and discard 2. You can discard 2 cards.
Draw 4 and discard 2 at that point. When
the thing
comes
is, Champion of Wits basically in this deck reads 4 mana. Do it twice. So draw 4 cards, discard 4 cards.
Yeah.
But that's just really good card selection. You're going to be able to find the best cards in your deck that way.
2 blue, tap. Return to Coastal Wizard and another target creature to their owner's hands. Activate this ability only during your turn before attackers are declared. Well, hey, first main phase, when you want to cast a copy of Coastal Wizard for 5 mana, you can tap it and return it, the token, or the original copy to your hand, and then another target creature. So you can bounce another creature or your own creature. This card's sick.
Yeah,
a lot of utility here.
It's really good with, again, the copies. Because they have haste, and you don't care if you send it back to its hand.
Right. Better just send the original, you know?
Yep.
And then next turn, you get to bounce another thing. It's like you're getting these interesting locks with a lot of these cards.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of these kind of loops. It's not a full lock unless you have infinite mana, but it definitely can sort of hold a lot of things at bay.
Yeah. Speaking of cards you want to bounce back to your hand.
This card's really good. So Dual Caster Mage, we found a home for it here.
It's
1 red for a human wizard. It's a 2/2, and it has flash. And when you cast it, you basically fork something. So when it enters the battlefield, you copy target instant or sorcery spell, and you can choose new targets for the copy. But for 1 additional mana, you do that again, so you're going to copy something twice for 4 mana.
Twice, and then you're going to find so many ways to bounce things back to your hand, and you can just hold up Dual Caster Mage with 1 extra mana against everyone for the rest of the game. Scary.
Dual Caster Mage is very good in a deck like this. Yeah.
Not much else to say about it. Hey, here's another card that I've always wanted to put into a deck.
This is sort of Wizard Tribal, but yeah. it has utility, too. You know, we were saying you're not worried about combat. But there are other reasons to put 1/1 counters on. So this is Sage of Fables. It's 2 and a blue for a 2/2 Merfolk Wizard. Each other wizard creature you control enters the battlefield with a 1/1 counter on it. But you can pay 2 and remove a 1/1 counter from a creature you control to draw a card. So you think like, oh, you make a token. It's a wizard. It's going to come in with a 1/1 counter. And then if you want, you can pay 2 mana and remove the counter from the token.
Maybe even get a free hidden.
Yeah. So I just think the fact that it draws you cards, pumps your wizards, yeah, those tokens have haste, so there are going to be times when it's like, well, I might as well do 3 damage to somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This next one's a gimme, Deadeye Navigator. Woof.
This is really good with Anala, because Anala says when another non-token wizard enters the battlefield. So you can get the token copies from Deadeye's blinking of the thing.
Okay.
And then sort of like, remember we said we need win conditions.
Yeah, wizard time.
Rite of Replication is a good win condition. So it's 2 blue for a sorcery, has kicker 5, and it says, create a token that's a copy of target creature. So for 4 mana, you get 1 copy. But if you kicked it for the additional 5, then you get 5 of those tokens instead.
It's the same rate as Anala. You get paid 1 mana for 1 copy.
Yeah, you just get 5 of them.
You cannot, however, trigger Anala because they are tokens that come into the battlefield.
Right,
but Rite of Replication is sick because it's like, I want 5 Blight Steals.
I want 5 of whatever you've got, or of my own thing, because a lot of my stuff has entered the battlefield's effects now.
Yeah.
I'm going to double those up. Think of it with Dual Caster Mage. It's so good with Dual Caster Mage.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it goes infinite, right? As long as you're targeting something else. You kicker it at another creature. You Dual Caster to copy it. You copy your Dual Caster. Now the Rite of Replication copies the Dual Caster, which brings in five more dual casters, which copy the Rite of Replication, which copies the dual caster. You do that a million times, and then you redirect all the million copies to one of the other things.
Don't forget to put Purphoros in this deck at that point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it seems pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the best way to play a spell like this, because it's a sorcery, is at instant speed.
Yep.
And what better way to do that than our favorite card of all time, now that the Prophet of Kruphix is gone, Vedalken Orrery.
Yeah, it's very important, I think, in these decks to be tricky, to hold your mana open, to be able to play things at instant speed, all your enter the battlefield effects. There's actually three ways. There's more, but there's three main ways to get that done. Vedalken Orrery is one of them.
Yeah.
Leyline of Anticipation is another one. And then there's a wizard-specific one, kind of.
Yeah, I love this card. Teferi, Mage of Zalfir.
Yep. Teferi is two blue for a 3/4 human wizard, has flash. Says creature cards you own that aren't on the battlefield have flash.
That's great. That's what you're casting. You're casting creatures for the most part.
Yep. They're all wizards with enter battlefield effects. And then also says each opponent can cast spells only any time he or she could cast a sorcery.
That's also absurd.
So you slow down your opponents, you're sped up. So the gap is widened, right? Yeah. Between the ability to respond to things.
And this also shuts down their Vedalken Orreries and stuff, right?
Yep.
Or does it override it?
No.
Oh, no, it's a layer effect, so this goes on top if they've already cast it. Yeah, Teferi's great. Teferi's great in so many different ways. If you've noticed, by the way, most of the cards we mentioned have a bunch of blue in their mana cost. So if you do decide to do this, and we don't talk about the mana base in this episode, and you put these cards in, just you know you're going to have to make your deck slightly favored towards blue.
Blue heavy,
because it's
sure.
very hard to cast these cards otherwise. That's why Teferi just doesn't see that much play, honestly. It's just hard to get them out.
Teferi's expensive, too. It's price-wise, so
true.
We understand. But you don't have to have that card. You could have Vedalken and Leyline. Leyline's not cheap either. Mm-hmm. All right, now let's talk about some Wizard Tribal cards. So Sage of Fables was kind of one. This is a good one. Docent of Perfection.
This card's really good in this deck.
Yep, so it's 3 blue-blue for a 5/4 Insect Horror. It has flying. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you put a 1/1 blue human wizard creature token onto the battlefield. Then, if you control 3 or more wizards, you transform the Docent of Perfection. Now, the wizards that you control do not have to be created by the Docent of Perfection. They can be wizards that were created by Anala.
Mm-hmm.
So your ability to flip Docent is so easy in this deck. And then it flips over and becomes the final iteration, which is a 6/5 Eldrazi insect with flying.
Mm-hmm.
But it says wizards you control get +2/+1 and have flying.
All your wizards, including the little tokens you just made with Docent. Wow.
So now all of a sudden you're probably actually going to be attacking. You turn into a combat-based deck.
Yeah, this is a win condition in this deck for sure.
And
this flipped.
It still says when you cast an instant or sorcery, you make a 1/1 blue human wizard token.
Yeah,
but it's now a 3/2 with flying, basically.
Yeah, the other thing, though, is you have to, in order to transform the Docent in Perfection, you have to cast an instant or sorcery first, and then it checks for the 3 or more wizards.
Yeah.
But still, very good. Giving all your wizards +2/+1 and flying, that is certainly a way to win this game.
And there are enough instants and sorceries. You've got 18 in the deck that you're going to be able to cast one.
Yeah.
You know, that's really all you need because you should have enough other wizards to just do it.
Very famous land here. Riptide Laboratory obviously goes in this deck where you tap it for a colorless or you can pay one and a blue and tap it to return target wizard you control to its owner's hand. So if you're going Wizard Tribal, Riptide Laboratory is literally built for your deck.
And again, returning it to your hand is what you want to do so you can recast it and make more tokens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't bounce the tokens.
Don't bounce. Well, you can. They're going to die by themselves, but it's a waste of mana.
But don't do it, yeah.
All right, and then the last category is more ramp. Don't forget, you want more ramp. You got tons of card draw. The problem you're going to run into is having so many cards and not enough land to deploy them.
To play them all, yeah.
Or not enough mana to deploy them. So I'd add every one of the signets that are in your colors. That's Izzet, Dimir, Rakdos. I think something like Urza's Incubator is doable because it makes most of your wizards cost
way less.
Think of Seagate Oracle. It's 2 and a blue. Well, it just costs blue.
Yeah.
I mean, how crazy is that?
Chromatic Lantern also, I think, is a big addition to this deck in that case. Just being able to do blue, very important.
Yep. So I would add at least 4 more ramp cards, maybe 5 or 6 even, just because your card draw is so high that you're going to be able to cycle through and find the non-draw, non-ramp cards.
Yeah, you're also not in the ramp colors, so it is very important for you to add ramp. Like, my Marchesa deck does not function without all the mana rocks in there. It just doesn't get off the ground. It can't go fast enough compared to someone that's Far-Seeking, or what was that new one?
Oh, yeah.
Traverse the Outland, I think.
Traverse the Outland, yeah.
Like, those cards are going to put other people so far ahead, and you're here dirtling around without a real win condition. So, you know, make sure that if you're going to play this deck, you either play it more control-y so that you're able to just peck in with damage and win that attrition game so you have more board wipes, or you make sure you put in your Vandal Blast and stuff, or you're just able to be a little faster than everyone, and Signets is definitely the way to do that, or just ramp in general.
I think we've said this before, but just to hammer it home for those that maybe haven't heard it yet, I believe that most games of Commander are won by stringing together multiple spells in a turn. Mm-hmm. They're very rarely won by I play one spell, then the next turn I play one spell, then the next turn I play one spell. You usually get to the point and you're planning for it, and then I'm going to do this and this on the same turn, sometimes three things. But in order to do that, you almost always need a specific amount of mana, and it's usually somewhere in the 8, 9, 10 range.
Yeah.
And so
mana ramp.
And that's why ramp's so important, because you need to get to the point where you're doing that before your opponents are. So very important. We have a bunch of list of cards that we would say to take out in favor of these cards. I'm not going to read that on the show, where you can go to the show notes, and those will be all listed for mm-hmm. you. But we're not just saying, oh, add these, what would you take out? We're listing a bunch of cards we would take out, and we're kind of erring on the side of some of the legendary creatures because they don't copy well.
Yeah.
A bunch of the stuff that has activated abilities, because activated abilities are not what Enola wants as much as Enter the Battlefields.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the instants and sorceries, because again, we have too much targeted removal, and we're not an instant and sorcery-based deck. We don't have as many ways to take advantage of them. I'm not saying take it all out, just that's what I'm erring on the side of.
Yeah, and you'll probably see that when you play it as well, that you're going to want to be like, oh, I'm going to cast this person and get double. Oh, wait, it's legendary.
I mean, Enola is very much Panharmonicon, except for the legendary thing, but for one extra mana, double all your Enter the Battlefield effects. That's a pretty good card.
That's a pretty good card. Yeah. Well, that's what the best part about Eminence is, that a lot of times when we talk about cards and decks, we're like, oh man, and if this is on, and if your commander's here too, then you do this. It's like, well, Eminence is always on. So that just makes Seagate Oracle become a 4-mana card where you get the ability twice.
Yeah.
You don't ever need to have Enola on the battlefield for it to trigger.
And just think of the difference that makes Seagate Oracle versus Nivik's Guild Mage.
Yeah.
Whereas normally in a normal deck, I think those cards are pretty close power level wise. In this deck, the gap is widened because Seagate Oracle is so much better if you do it twice.
Yeah.
So.
Not to mention, I don't think you ever cast Enola unless you're trying to go for the win condition, in which case you can just wait till the turn to cast her and Docent or whatever else is out there to drain people of life.
Yeah, I can see you doing it if you just happen to look down and you're like, I have 10 wizards, but that's going to be so rare.
Yeah, she's just great in the enchantment zone.
In the enchantment zone. Yeah. That's the new name of the show, everybody.
Welcome to the enchantment
zone. Greetings, humans.
You have
entered the enchantment zone. Something, something, enchantments are cool. Melissa and Cora kick my butt with them.
That's true.
Yeah. So they are evidently pretty cool.
They are pretty cool.
All right. It's time for Two of the Listeners. What do you think about the Wizards deck? What cards did we miss? You know, cards that you would add that you think we didn't talk about? Or what cards in the deck right now do you think we didn't mention but need to come out?
Mm-hmm. And what cards do you think you should go to www.cardkingdom.com/C17 to pre-order/order now that the deck is here? Wink. I will say this, if you guys are speculators and stuff and you want to speculate on cards, just buy the commanders. They're foil.
Yeah.
They are going to be good in the long run. I don't think none of these are like womp womps. You know, they're all good cards. So
I think Kess is going to be quite good.
Yes, I think Kess is definitely going to be good. I could see Marisil just being the purveyor of a lot.
I'm very excited about the card. I don't think it's going to be like top tier, but I think, yeah. I think Kess could be sort of a high tier, maybe not tier one, but a high tier card. It just has all the earmarks, right? Instants and sorceries, reusable recursion type stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I would definitely do that. So make sure you do that. Also, another way to support the show is by going to that cardkingdom.com/C17 link and buying some Ultra Pro product along with your cards.
You can buy Ultra Pro product anywhere. It really does help us out. They really have upped their quality game so much in the past few months with the Eclipse sleeves. They got the awesome gravity dice, the heavy metal dice. Now they have deck boxes, sleeves, and playmats all themed to the Commander stuff. So really, if you can pick up Ultra Pro products, you are helping the show out a ton.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
And
now
yourself.
It's time.
And yourself.
And you're helping yourself out. Yeah, that's true. Help me help you.
Help me help you.
All right, time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I have something.
Yeah?
I've been on sort of a podcast binge lately, and I found one that I really like.
Oh.
It's by a guy who's written a number of books that I enjoy. His name is Malcolm Gladwell.
Yep.
And Gladwell wrote a book called The Tipping Point. He's probably most famous for a book called Blink. A few others. He used to write for articles for The New Yorker. Kind of gets into sort of sociology and the way that the human mind works and things like that. And he has a podcast, and it's called Revisionist History. Now, it's not actually about history in the way that I thought it was. I was like, Malcolm Gladwell, history, I will like this. And I watched it, and it's sort of like looking at things that have happened through a new lens now about did we analyze that correctly or were we taught correctly about
it. Oh, interesting.
And it's pretty sweet. Malcolm's got a really great way of sort of formulating thoughts. And so I would highly recommend his podcast. It's super interesting. He's just an interesting guy. And it's quick. It's like a half hour long once a week or so. I think they're in the middle of the second season now.
I'll check it out. Where can we find it?
You can find it on iTunes or probably Stitcher, although I haven't checked there. It's called Revisionist History.
Malcolm Gladwell. Make sure you guys look it up.
I would check out Malcolm Gladwell's books, too. Let me just add that into the end step. As
yeah? Are they awesome?
They're all great. You know what else is?
Gotcha.
Why did you say that? So we have another podcast that we want to tell you about. We tell you about it every single week.
It's just as awesome every time we tell you about it.
It is our good friends, Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. You know, Kessler is going to be on this show very soon because we have a whole ton of extra podcasts in the works because it's Commander Christmas. Commander 2017 is coming out. So yeah. Alex is a big Commander guy, a very good Commander deck builder, but he's also into Modern.
Yep.
And so that's what they talk about on their show, which is the Masters of Modern. You can find them on Twitter at the MMcast or right next to us at collected.company, which is our Magic Hub.
And it's a great way to also expand your Magic mind. You know, learn a little bit on Modern. Another way to expand your Magic mind is by going to youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast, where you can watch mind-blowing versions of our podcasts that are in video format, thanks to our editor, Terry Robertson. And also big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the Living Card animations that start and end every show. You can find him on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG. Make sure you give thanks to both of these people. They're great.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you very soon with more pre-con reviews.
It don't stop.
It don't stop. Never stop. Never.
Oh, boy. I'm so tired.
Peace.
I
just skipped all the "see you next time."
Yeah, see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
What cards do you think we should take out or should recommend to take out that we didn't put on our list? Really interested to hear.
Hold on.
Kiwi is not...
Hey!
Kiwi in trouble.